You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @hiv_hour and Instagram at @hivhour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on radioreverb.com.
Does she listen with the finer things? Does she make you want to scream a name? Does she hit it from the front to back? Did you let her break it down like that? Should have told me your love was gone. Never thought that you'd do me wrong. Boy, I thought our love was strong. Don't mush up and freeze. Don't bully night creeps. No more VIPs, no more dough, we can't even kick it. No more shopping sprees, no more late night creeps. No more VIPs, no more dough, we can't even kick it. No more shopping sprees, no more late night creeps. No more VIPs, no more dough, we can't even kick it. No more shopping sprees.
Hey everyone,
how are you? It's
hot evening. And sweaty. Hot and sweaty. Yeah, are you hot and sweaty, Stephen?
I am hot and sweaty, Sue. It's the sun is out in London, so good. It's good. It's good. Good. Good.
Good. So we're not showing off in Brighton that it's sunny. It's in London as well.
London as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you hot deserve... and sweaty, Tanya?
Oh, very hot and sweaty.
I don't know where we're going with this conversation.
Yeah, well Tanya was hot and sweaty from the weekend because Tanya was celebrating her 50th birthday.
Happy birthday, Tanya.
Yeah, and yes. Tanya went to a nightclub in Brighton to see the Dream Boys. So Tanya's still sweating from that. Sorry.
That's another show as well, isn't it?
That's for another show.
That's for another show.
An after dark show.
Yeah, yes.
So, coming Josh, soon. How are you?
I'm not too bad, yeah. As you say, it's been nice weather, isn't it? So it's good to get some sunshine for a while.
Sure is, isn't it? Sure is.
Yeah. So, yeah, we haven't got Tony today, have we? He's busy this week.
No, he's off doing one of his many, many other things, isn't he?
Yes. So I'm just going to go through the tracks we're going to play because we're quite busy this show. So I'll just quickly go through what the tracks we put. The one at the beginning was Finer Things by Stigmatic. Mm-hmm. The one after a great interview you did, Sue, with Martin Harris and THT's What About My Love by Moodshift. Mm-hmm. And then the Self Control by Bailey Badasha. Mm-hmm. And then after the interview with Diego and David from the Pedal Study, that is Take Me Higher by Robin Thicke. And then we finish on a fantastic classic, Take Some Time Out for Love, Soul Orchestra.
Good.
So it's got a good show going on today. We also wanted to mention, because we're on podcasts, aren't we? And we've been doing it for the last 2 years on Audio Boom, and that goes out onto Apple Podcasts and Spotify and stuff like that. And I was looking at the stats the other day, and I didn't realise you scroll down the page of the stats page, and it shows you where people are listening around the world, and we're global. I mean,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see, isn't it?
God,
absolutely. Yeah, and I think
we have to just say hello to those people and thank them. I think that the people from around the world are listening in these in different countries.
It's also, Josh, it's also key for our listeners who we're reaching out to. Ooh.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're hitting Brighton, obviously. We're hitting the UK, great. But there's other parts of Europe and the world that are listening into this amazing show that we... The only, as I understand, radio show dedicated to HIV. And I think everyone that's involved needs to, you know, and sometimes we don't recognise it. We think, oh, yeah, it's another community radio show. But no, it's, yeah, those stats were amazing, weren't they, Tanya?
It is a worldwide, you know, radio show. Mm. And I'm amazed with Africa as well. There's some who listens it from Africa, which is really... That means life is changing slowly and
exactly. Yeah,
it also shows. I think we are the only radio show. There has been radio shows in the past around the world, but I think at the moment we are the only one globally. I think I might be wrong about that, but I know we are definitely in the UK. So it's just good to acknowledge the people who listen and thank them for listening and carry on listening to us. Because, and if you want to contact us, they can always contact us on our. In our Gmail account, which is hiv@gmail.com. It's always good to hear from people from around the world, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what have we got on the show?
Well, I've got a little interview with, it's a bit of a community type interview with a guy called Martin Harris. He works for community fundraising at the Thames Higgins Trust, and he's talking about, dare we mention, you know, we are approaching World AIDS Day. We're going to be talking about a few great initiatives of fundraising that, you know, our listeners can get involved with in the happening in Brighton, Glasgow and London. So, yeah, really interesting little interview, yeah.
Right. And then we've got, Tony's done an interview with a good friend of his from Worthing called Jerry, who's who's lived with the HIV for 40 years. Wow. So it's just his experiences of those last 40 years. Mm. And then then we got an interview. I did a great interview a couple of weeks ago with a guy called Diego Garcia, and who's a researcher at the Brighton and Hove Medical School, and David Frey, who's the patient rep and web designer of a new study in Brighton called the PEDAL study. And that's a study asking patients' experiences who take dual and triple medication. So just a bit of an interview there.
Great.
And then, Stephen, we've got the roundup, haven't we? After that,
we have. We've got our 1 minute roundup of bits of information from all over the world. So we are focusing mainly on Africa this week, but that wasn't a deliberate thing. But so we've got that as well.
Great.
Right.
So yeah. So we're straight into your interview, I think, Sue, with Martin Harris from Terence Higgins.
Great.
Radio Reverb.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIVL on Radio Reverb 97.FM in the Brighton area, and you can also get us on podcast. I'd like to introduce you to Martin Harris. He's from the Terence Higgins Trust, and I'm going to bring Martin in and he can tell you what we're going to be talking about just now. Hi, Martin, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, Sue. Yourself?
Yeah, not so bad. The sun's shining in Brighton, so it can't be bad, can it? Well, it's shining at the moment, so we...
Well, it's also dazzling blue skies in East London as well, so...
Oh, fabulous. We've all got it. So no one can moan about the weather at the moment, unless it gets a bit too hot. So Martin, tell our listeners, obviously you're from the Terence Higgins Trust, what do you actually do at the Terence Higgins Trust? Because the Terence Higgins Trust is a massive charity, isn't it?
Yes, so Terence Higgins Trust, we do a lot of supporting people living with HIV. We've got lots of different services, people that can access our THTU Direct helpline, and we have online counselling. We do a lot of outreach as well as a charity, so we've been going out to prides over the summer and sort of meeting supporters, giving sexual health advice and things like that. So, yeah, just a broad spectrum of just helping and supporting the HIV community.
And what sort of, I hate to say department, that is the wrong word, what sort of part of the Terence Higgins Trust do you focus on?
So I work in the community fundraising team. So we're supporting all the amazing people that are doing different fundraising events for us. So we've got people out this weekend going off to do the Great North Run and the Brighton Marathon. And we've got people sort of doing events for us, which has been quite challenging over COVID. But since so the past couple of weeks, we've been getting a lot of interest again from sort of venues and things as we build up to World AIDS Day on the 1st of December.
And I think we just said before we went online that things are starting to feel different, feel better about, you know, people coming in, more interest. Would you say so?
Yeah, definitely. It's been really refreshing over the last couple of weeks to have conversations with people again, which I think after lockdown, sort of stepping with venues and things like LGBT venues, sort of just kind of feeling now that maybe things are getting slightly back to normal, that they can consider maybe supporting charities like ourselves. So we're always always fortunate to hear from people that want to do events for us. And also had a few theatres contacting us recently, putting on productions as we build up to World AIDS Day. So yeah, I think it's been a tough time for lots of charities across the UK. So it's just nice to feel that people are thinking of us again.
And we're not forgotten, and I don't think we can be forgotten, because, you know, we do some amazing things in all communities throughout the town of Siggins Trust, you know, for all one goal, you know, trying to break the stigma, trying to break the transmission of HIV, and also, you know, trying to bring an end of HIV transmission by 2030. But you've got some really interesting fundraising things that are coming up at the Town of Siggins Trust. Do tell us.
Yeah, so last December, we had some success with some of our amazing supporters going off and doing some walks for us, which was just a really simple thing to do in lockdown, where people were just picking a distance, picking a day, going off and doing a walk and doing some fundraising and bits and pieces. And this year, World AIDS Day, with lockdown sort of hopefully over and COVID sort of hopefully fading into the background, we're hosting three events this year around World AIDS Day. So we're going to be hosting some 10K fundraising walks in Glasgow, Brighton and London, which will be nice for us to get back out and meet our supporters face to face, and also just nice an opportunity for people, if they are in Glasgow, Brighton or London, to come along and get sponsored to go off and do a 10k walk, which I think is quite manageable for most people to do a 10k walk.
I've got this thing, if some people, I fancy that, but I'd like to run. Is that an option, or is a walk?
It's a walk, unfortunately, due to licensing and bits and pieces. If people are off running, that becomes a bit more of a bigger event than if people are off going off and doing a leisurely walk. So, unfortunately, we are encouraging people just to walk. Although we may get some eager beavers, which we'll try and run some of it. But
here's another question then. What about some wheelchair users? Could they take part in this, Martin?
Yeah, so we are in the process of just sort of mapping out our routes and stuff, and we want to make the course and the route as easy as possible for people. So our routes around Brighton, Glasgow and London will sort of have a limited number of sort of road crossings. And so we have taken that into consideration. We are still finalising the routes. So if there are kind of any difficulties for people that may sort of be using a wheelchair, we will let people know well in advance. But that's something definitely on our radar, because we want to make it as inclusive and for
absolutely. So the first one kicks off in Glasgow. What's the date of that one, Martin?
So Glasgow will be in Glasgow on the 21st of November, which is a Sunday, and we're going to be at the Speak Easy Bar in central Glasgow. We're hoping that the walk will start around about midday. The second walk will be in Brighton in your home patch, which will be on the 28th of November. And we're starting and finishing that at the Charles Street Tap Bar, which is down on the seafront near the pier, which is a lovely venue. And a great team down there, which are really looking forward to working with us and meeting our walkers on that day. And then the final walk will be at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern on the 5th of December. Similar kind of timings, really. We're just firming up the details, but all our walks will be starting around about the midday period. And then also the nice thing about the three venues is that once people have completed their walks, they can stick around for some drinks and food with us. But all venues have like a cabaret in the evening, so people will be able to stick around for a bit of a party afterwards.
Make an evening of it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the iconic RVT have always had sort of that Sunday cabaret, but also like the Charles Street Tap and Speakeasy have got things going on those days as well. So, yeah, hopefully people feel that they could come along and enjoy the fun. And this year we're encouraging people to really walk with us, firstly to remember loved ones, people that we've lost over the past 40 years, to walk with us to help end transmissions, as you said earlier, by in the UK, hopefully by 2030, which is something we now feel is very achievable. Mm-hmm. And also just to walk with us to help change perceptions of what it's like living with HIV in 2021, because we know that obviously there is unfortunately still stigma that exists. But after our life really changed campaign recently, where we were demonstrating that life doesn't have to have a negative, HIV doesn't necessarily have to have a negative impact on your life, that people may want to walk with us to sort of smash some stigma, which we know that still needs to be done, unfortunately.
And I read that when people sign up, and perhaps you can sort of mention this, they get a free Terence Higgins Trust t-shirt, is that correct?
Yeah, so we're going to give everybody a t-shirt, although I think on December and November in Glasgow and Brighton we might be all wrapped up under several layers of coats and scarves.
Oh no, yeah, because it's winter.
Why can't World AIDS Day be in June when it's nice and sunny? Why can't it be in June?
everyone
will get a t-shirt. We're hoping to have the London Gay Men's Chorus at our London venue. We're going to have face painters, people doing glitter beards.
Oh, wow.
Lola Lasagna from Brighton is going to be hosting our London.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Lola's a very warm supporter of THT, so Lola will be hosting our Brighton and London walk. So people are coming along and encouraged to raise money for us, but also just have a nice day and sort of connect with some of the community and meet people from the charity.
Mm-hmm. And Martin, what is, because people want to know, what is the sign-up fee?
So at the moment we've got an early bird offer, which is £15 until the 19th of September, and then after the 19th it goes up to £20. Mm-hmm. And the sign-up fee is just to help with the running costs of hosting the events.
Of course.
And then what we're asking everybody to do is to pledge to raise a minimum of £150 to support our work at THT. So, but I think in this day and age, if you set up a Just Giving page and you've got time enough to sort of ping that out on your social media and circulate that to your friends, kind of think 150 is quite achievable for people, and they've got enough time to do that. So,
brilliant.
Yeah.
So, Martin, this sounds really exciting, and I know I've got a couple of people that are really interested in signing up for the Brighton one and the London one. So, people are listening in. Yes, this is the time now. I'd like to perhaps do something, support a charity that's perhaps helped me in the past and supported me, perhaps through my own diagnosis and so forth. How can they get in contact with you?
So if they go onto our website, which is www.tht.org.uk, and then if they do put /WAD for World AIDS Day, they should be able to find us. So it's tht.org.uk/WAD. But also my email address, if anybody wanted to get in contact, is martin.harris@tht.org.uk. So if anyone wants to drop me a line. We are also looking for some kind of gifts for like to give out to our walkers. So if anybody's got any contacts in Glasgow, London or Brighton, we're looking for people who can potentially supply us with bottles of water, cereal bars, maybe some pastries and fruit on the day. So if anyone's got any contacts they'd like to share, we'd be delighted to hear from them.
Brilliant. As a pleasure, as always, thank you so much. I know you've come on before on the HIV and always got some really great information to share. I really hope those three events go really well, and I hope, you know, it's well attended by walkers and people to support. I mean, if someone doesn't want, you know, can't for whatever reason, but they'd like to come along and support, that would be a great idea, wouldn't it, Martin?
Yeah, and also if Brighton, Glasgow or London isn't convenient, then we're always encouraging people maybe, like I say, to consider maybe doing their own little walk. So just quite easy just to pick a day and a distance. And we were just so surprised last year how such a simple idea just kind of really connected with some people. Yeah. We had some lovely pictures of people out doing sort of walks along the Thames and all over the country and up in Glasgow. And so, yeah, it was just nice to see people out and about and getting some fresh air after a quite challenging year last year.
So. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I really do hope that all three events go really well, and we hope to welcome you back soon to the HIV Hour, Martin.
Brilliant, thank you, Sue. It's always lovely to speak to you.
Thank you. We got something, but you're fading in and out. You want nothing, what's this all about? I can't let you go. Hold me close. We got something, but you're fading in and out. You want nothing, what's this all about? I can't let you go. Hold me close.
What about my love? Wasn't it enough? Just let me know so I can hold you close. What about my love? Wasn't it enough? Just let me know and hold me close.
Show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Hey there, it's Tony from the HIV Hour, and I'm here with one of my really, really old friends, and I don't mean that in any rude way, but old as in I've known him such a long time since I've been in Worthing, and this is Jerry. Hey, Jerry.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, Tony.
Good, good.
I'm looking forward to giving you what you want to know.
All the news, all the goss.
I think you know all the goss about me anyway. So,
like, at the HIV Hour, we're trying to show how people living with HIV for, say, 15, 20, 30, 40 years are getting on, living through it, and also with the little things that bubble up and stuff like that. I know with you, Jerry, how long you've been diagnosed now? 40 years, is it?
It is, yes. Another date and a time. Always remember that.
It's terrible, isn't it? You do. It's stuck in your head. I know mine, and I know where I was driving down the M25. So I know you from old, and we've had loads of discussions about, you know, living well with HIV and how it affects you kind of later on in life. So can I ask your age?
63.
So that's 23 when you were diagnosed.
I was, yes.
How did that feel?
I just accepted it when I was told. Okay. And when I was given my diagnosis, and the nurse who told me, said to me, I would be dead within 7 years.
Okay.
And because that's what was happening at the time. And then there was AZT. And I just stood up and I said, I won't. So I would still like to see this nurse one day and sort of just smile at her and say, I'm still here.
Absolutely.
I'm still here. But yeah. Anyway.
Stick the middle finger up and say, off.
I think that they didn't know. It was all new in them days, wasn't it? But I think it boiled down to the support. I've always had the support, my family, and my close friends, and I think that's helped me get through it.
I think having a good family, I mean, I don't have a good family, but I have a good chosen family, and I think to have the support of a family and a chosen family is amazing, and I think
absolutely.
It helps you.
And it's helped me, looking back over the years, I've dealt with things that's come along, like my peripheral neuropathy. I've had that maybe 20 years now.
Wow, okay.
And the newest thing, we don't know if it's... there's still studies going on. I speak to Judith about this. Mm-hmm. My cerebellum atrophy. And you know, I was like at the beginning, Tony.
Yeah.
And I think I've worked through this. Hmm. And you see the difference in me. And it's,
oh, totally,
it's
yeah.
been over a few years. And...
you were kind of really closed off and very... Not sharp. You've always been a really warm person, but you kind of lost some of that warmth and then you've got it back now. In
I have, space. Absolutely, yeah. Yes. It's terrific. But the, what we want to talk about the cerebellum atrophy.
Yeah, yeah. How does that affect you? And, you know, is there any treatment for it? What's...
There's no treatment for it, no. Okay. Nobody really understands it because I've not been given really any answers.
Okay.
Every 6 months I have an MRI scan to see if it's any worse.
Okay.
But before I was dying, I thought it was vertigo at the beginning for over 6 months.
Mm.
And I had to start using the dormant neurons in my brain.
Okay.
But I didn't know what they were.
Yeah.
You know.
And, we've got loads of them.
Yes, I have. And I had to start, I had 18 weeks of physio.
Wow.
And she was terrific. And she showed me lots of things to do. And at the beginning, I was just walking. I couldn't even look up.
Okay.
I looked round. I couldn't drive for 6 weeks.
Wow.
It was like independence had been taken away. Yeah. But I just thought one day I have to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know. And I did. It's taken a long time. And
you've always been sort of someone that's really strong and really, I don't know, I can't swear, but you've always been really like strong. Your mind's always been really strong. So
I think I've always tried to be positive, but I'm only human, you know. Sometimes, totally. Some days I have,
yeah.
As I said to you, it's like a switch being switched on.
Yeah.
But that can have to do with my situation too, with my ex. Yeah. But I've still got the virus. I don't. Fun enough, I was speaking to my sister about it this morning. She said, "I never really think about you now with it."
It's weird, isn't it? Once you get to a certain time, I mean, apart from you take your meds every day, but I don't really think about mine now.
No, I don't. It's just you take your meds, and that's just come second nature now to me.
I think how are you thinking about the whole maybe getting a jab once a month or once a year to stop you having to remember your meds and stuff? How do you think about that?
Funny, I spoke to you last week about that, but we were speaking about it. I would speak to Judith, my consultant at the clinic.
Yeah.
I'm seeing her in 2 weeks' time. I'll certainly mention that to her. Yeah. But, yes, but I've always taken my medication on down. I've never missed it.
Okay. That's good.
Never, ever missed it.
Never, ever missed it.
But I've changed my medication several times over the years. I've wanted a break and...
Yeah, they did that when I was first diagnosed. They talking about treatment holidays and stuff like that. And it's now they don't do that, do they? It's like you have to be...
I don't think
they do. Okay. You have to be, like, every day. That's why I think these jabs, I think, are going to be so much better for not only us... But people say, like in the Far East, Middle East, that they forget them all. They, you know, sometimes, or in Africa, when it's not as easily ready available, the treatment.
So. Well, that would be tricky, even if you're travelling. Say, for instance, I was thinking of going to Dubai.
Yeah.
And I would have had to try and arrange my medication. And it was quite a few years back. When me and Nigel went to the States, we had to do that. We had to organise our medication over there. And that was a bloody hassle, having to do that sort of medication over there. And then
I'm pretty bad. I just stuck mine in, like, vitamin bottle and just...
All right. You're a good girl, you are. But, yes. But the injection, it sounds fab.
Yeah.
So, what is it, every 6 months?
I think there's a jab once a month. There's a jab 6 months and they're doing a yearly jab. So I'm not sure. There are trials going on at the moment, which is going to be amazing.
Have you spoke to Judith about it?
No, I missed my appointment this morning. Oops. So I'm going to see her on the first.
Did you phone up?
Yeah.
Right.
So.
But yes, well, with my cerebellum atrophy, I deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, some days it affects me more.
Yeah.
Especially in the evenings, my speech can become slurred.
Okay.
Just different things. It's like I can't go up ladders anymore and I have to pace things out.
Yeah.
You know, so...
But I think like you said earlier, is, like, keeping a positive attitude. Like, whatever Judith or whatever the consultants say, you do without question and then... Keep yourself as healthy as possible, don't you? Because you're always walking Lulu, your little dog.
I do, at least twice a day.
Yeah. So you're really active.
I'm active for, like, gardening. I've got quite a big garden. I have to keep up to date. Yeah. I call it housework in the garden.
I love it.
Yes. And the hub, you know, I love the hub.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I really do. When you first started that, yeah, it was just nice, yes. It's that I've become part of my routine now, the hub.
I think it's...
On Tuesdays.
Yeah, Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, the Worthing Lido at 11 a.m.
And cheese.
And Giuseppe's. Giuseppe's Light in Warwick Street.
For a coffee.
But we normally start at the Lido in on the seafront. But yeah, no, the Worthing Hub is... really kind of given me something to think about and do, and sort of I know it was needed, and now especially losing THT and Metro,
yes,
it's even more important. But
it is, I think it always has been. It's grown, it's getting, it's, I wouldn't say it's getting any better, because it always has been for me. Yes,
yeah, all right, my dear,
thank you very much. And I look forward to hearing this.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Cheers,
you're all. Welcome.
Thank you.
More to me than HIV, we are passionate about breaking down stigma by showing positive portraits of people living with HIV. We are thrilled to have Angus Stewart, renowned professional photographer, taking portraits of our participants at the end of September. If you'd like to take part and show that there is more to me than HIV, please have a look at our website at www.moretomethanhiv.life.
The hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM DAB. I'm with Dr. Diego Garcia and David Frey, who Diego is a researcher at Brighton and Hove Medical School, and David Frey is the patient rep and web designer for the new PEDAL study, which is about patient experiences of dual and triple therapy in Brighton. How are you both doing?
Ah, very well, Josh. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Good, thanks so much for having us here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, actually. It's good to talk about these things, and obviously you want people to come on, go on the study. So, Diego, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yes, so I am from Spain, but I've been in the UK for 6 years now. I came here to do a PhD at UCL in London in gender and sexuality studies. And for that, I did a lot of ethnographic work in Indonesia. I was working mainly with LGBT Muslims, most of whom were living also with HIV. So there is that connection with the study that we are going to be discussing today.
Okay.
And I have also been doing some teaching at UCL, focusing specifically on issues related to gender and sexuality. So that's me. And then in relation also to this study, I've been involved in charity work when I was in Sweden doing my master's degree, working for an HIV charity, and also in Indonesia I did a lot of work looking at grants and funding proposals and working in solidarity with local communities there.
Fabulous, thank you. So the PEDAL study is a new study in Brighton. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about it and what it's about?
Yes, of course. So the study, we started recruiting participants a couple of months ago, a month and a half ago. We are looking at patients' experiences and perceptions on their treatments, looking at dual drug regimes and also triple drug regimes. We have a target group of participants on Dovato, which is a combination drug containing lamivudine and dolutegravir.
Okay.
And then we have two control groups, one alternative dual drug regimes and then another one on triple drug regimes. The study also, David, has been part of the design of the study, so we can discuss together a bit about that. But yeah, I would say what is really special or unique about this study is that it is not another clinical trial where people might have to like switch drugs or get like tests done. This is all about listening to people's experiences. It's a qualitative study.
Mm.
It has three stages. Do you want me to tell you?
Absolutely, yeah, you do.
So the first, we are currently in the middle of the first stage, which is what we call cultural domain analysis. That's the method we are using. It's a method that we use in medical anthropology to ask people to list everything they can think of in relation to a specific cultural domain that would be like an area of thought or a theme. In this case, we are asking participants to list all the positive and negative aspects they can think of in relation to their treatment.
Okay.
So I can also tell you later a bit about the preliminary findings that we have so far. We've done around 30 plus interviews or sessions. And then after participants list all these aspects, then we ask them to sort them into different piles or groups to see how they create connections or how they see linkages between different themes. And then the final step that we do during each of the sessions is what we call ranking, where participants rank the categories from the most positive and important to them to the least positive. And then when thinking about negative aspects, we ask them to reflect on the most negative and impactful on their everyday lives. And this is all intended to produce data or generate data that then we can analyze to improve care and offer better services to the participants.
Which is so important, isn't it? In our HIV care, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So these studies also help with other things, don't they? Once you've got the results, it helps with other places. You can like the Lawson unit, is that correct?
Yes. So even though that wasn't the main goal of the study, what we've been able to identify from the experiences of the participants is that they often mention things that we were not expecting, but that are also very helpful in relation to, for example, the care that they receive. We are working, so the study is being conducted by a team of researchers from the Brighton and Sussex Medical School, but in collaboration with the NHS and the Lawson unit specifically. And something that participants have been emphasizing is how happy they are with the services provided by the Lawson unit.
Mm.
And this includes from the receptionists to nurses, doctors, and everyone working at this location. But also there are reflections on the care and changes and the evolution that they have experienced in the past years in terms of that holistic care that some people have mentioned during interviews that they used to receive, and now having to visit a GP and then going back to the Lawson unit. So this is also relevant for us to reflect internally about how what is working well and what is working less well, and what needs to be improved.
Yeah, which is invaluable, actually, isn't it, in these services. David, what's your role in with the
patient? So my official title, I suppose, is patient rep. So I was diagnosed with HIV in 1993, so that means I've been living with HIV 28 years now. I was diagnosed at a time where there was no treatment. So I have experience of monotherapy when AZT came out. I've got experience of dual therapy.
Yeah.
I've got experience of triple combination therapy. I think it's our experience as people living with HIV and taking treatment that is what the study is looking at.
Yeah.
You get the drug companies, they make the pills, so they're trying to act on certain enzymes that will stop HIV replicating. The doctors prescribe the pills and do their best to help us manage side effects. But not often are we asked, what is it like taking antiretrovirals? Mm. And that is the essence of this study. There is no right answer for what is right for me. It might be a completely different experience to somebody else. So some people experience side effects, some people don't, some people love, you know, they're taking their pills because it suits their lifestyle. Other people really struggle with things. And that's what we're looking at in the study. There's no tick boxes. We really want to know the human experience. And I'd never even heard of medical anthropology until I was brought on board to help design the study. And it is fascinating. And the study was designed right at the start when COVID hit. So the study has been designed to be completely online, so people don't have to, you know, make a big effort to come to a venue and be interviewed. They can do it online at a time convenient to them. The researchers are ever so friendly. Met D.A.
Absolutely, yes.
Side effects is the wrong word, but there are benefits to the study which we didn't even think about. So the people are telling us their experiences about taking the antiretroviral therapy, but they're also telling us about their experiences of using services. And we can pass that information on, even though it's not relevant to the study, we can pass it on, and that will be valuable feedback for the Lawson unit and the services that we receive in the city.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of another positive aspect that we have identified that is not related specifically to the treatment, but some of the people that we have interviewed have been in touch with us after the interview to say thanks, because they felt that the experience of telling us about their perceptions and experiences with their treatment had helped them to feel better, and they saw it as a kind of therapeutic exercise. And I have been reflecting on this before during my PhD, because I listened to very painful stories from queer Muslims, that was the theme I was exploring, who had been rejected by family members, who had been victims of violence. And I started thinking about that then, and I have a friend actually who was working on that idea of therapeutic interviewing, and how just by listening to what people have to say, that can have a positive impact on their lives. And we've had a few people contacting us by email afterwards and saying thanks. It was so nice to share this. And this has also helped us to identify that some of the participants have no spaces where they can share this type of thoughts. And we've discussed this with David when I was mentioning you the case of someone who commented on this, and that he was looking for resources and groups where he would be able to discuss with other people. So it's very important also that space where you can be listened to and where you can also express what's in your mind.
And wants to talk to people who are like-minded, who might be going through the same thing as well. Such an individual thing, isn't it, taking tablets? Because everyone's on a different...
Yeah.
Combination, and it will deal with side effects differently. So these studies are amazing.
I have noticed that as people living with HIV, we do, when we do meet each other, and we have the opportunity to, we do discuss our treatments with each other.
Yeah.
It's very rare that we have the opportunity to speak to somebody in a clinical setting to say what our experience is. I think it's quite important. And obviously the feedback from this study will go to clinicians, it will go to pharmaceutical companies, and they'll have a better appreciation of what we go through, and hopefully that will improve care and services and for all.
So the study is currently taking place, and we started recruitment a month and a half ago. This first stage of the study, where we are doing the online and in-person sessions, will be taking place until the end of December. So if people are interested in participating, we would like to invite them to get in touch before the end of the year. And then after that, from January to March, we will be holding focus group discussions where we will be bringing people together. And we expect that that can also have a positive impact on participants by creating connections between them and being able to listen to each other and share their experiences. And then the study will conclude with a final in-depth interview with some of the participants, and that's gonna be taking place from April to June 2022, next year.
Great. And then you can come on the show again and tell us the results, which would be amazing too.
Yes, we can tell you about the findings and what the recommendations that we have produced also for pharmaceutical companies and those at the Lawson unit.
Yeah, great. So if someone wants to do this, is very interested when they're listening to this, how do people get involved?
Yeah, so I can tell you first about the inclusion criteria for those that are listening to us today and who might be interested in participating.
Yeah.
We are looking at patients on dual drug combinations, such as Dovato, that would be the target group, but also those on alternative dual drug regimes and patients on triple drug regimes. Okay. So for example, Triomec, Viplera, people use different names. They might use the commercial name or the components. Also, we are looking at people who are older than 18 years old, who are able to consent, who receive HIV care at the HIV department of the Brighton and Sussex University Hospital, the Lawson unit. And all genders, sexual orientations, and socioeconomic groups are eligible for participation.
Okay.
In terms of the exclusion criteria, it would be patients not fitting the inclusion criteria that I just mentioned, including those taking off-label drug combinations due to complex HIV resistance patterns, those that are ART naive, or individuals declining antiretroviral therapy. As David has mentioned before, people can participate online or in person.
Yeah.
But of course, if none of those options work, then it will be difficult to participate. We are doing interviews at the Clinical Research Facility, what used to be known as the Elton John Center, and also online on Zoom, Teams, Skype. Participants can choose their preferred method.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the what you were asking about what we are offering participants for their participation, we are offering a £10 gift card for participation in each of the sessions.
Yeah.
So that's £30 in total. And for those that live in the Brighton and Hove area and need to take a bus to attend in person, we are also covering the bus or train, covering the cost of that. So yeah, and this gift card can be used in lots of supermarkets, bookshops, so yeah, something just to say thanks and as a token of appreciation for their participation.
Yeah, thank you. And so how do people, what's the website?
So there is a website. It'll be going live at the end of the month. Yeah. So the address for that is www.pedalstudy.org.uk. And there'll be a lot of posters around town and some leaflets in clinic as well.
Yeah.
But there's information on the website, and you can download a copy of the leaflet if you want to. And you could also email the researchers and myself directly.
Yeah.
Also, if someone listening to us today have no access to the website, on their, if they don't have a smartphone or a laptop, they can also feel free to call the Lawson unit and then mention their clinical ID or that they are interested in participating, and then we can get or discuss this with their doctor. And then they can let us know.
And they'll pass that on to you, which is great. Well, thank you, both of you, to come on. It's been great to
do.
Sounds like a fantastic study, actually. Really good.
Thank you for the opportunity.
No, thank you. You're listening to the HIV Hour.
Everybody, welcome back to the HIV Hour. So we are going to do the roundup now, and that's bits of information from all over the world. And my piece of information It's a study that was done in South Africa, and it was done in a place called KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa. I hope I've said that right. And basically, it's the home delivery of HIV medications in South Africa significantly increased viral suppression compared to those who received clinical care, according to a study that was done by the University of Washington School of Medicine. The study conducted with Amazon.com guidance during COVID-19 restrictions in South Africa showed that a study among participants paying a fee for home delivery and the monitoring of antiretroviral therapy was highly accessible in the context of low income and high unemployment and improved health outcome as a result. So the researching findings were presented at a virtual conference on opportunistic infections in 2021. And the one-time fee home delivery was a tier-based fee. So it went from US dollars from $2, $4, and $6. And working with Amazon.com, routing scientists developed an algorithm to support the efficient delivery of medication that chooses a route dependent on the remaining antiretroviral supply and the location of the client. And the study team delivered the medication following the algorithm and the clinic care free home delivery. It increased viral suppression from 74% in the clinic group to 88% in the home delivery group. So it was reassuring to see that the clinic services were able to move to fast track the medication and the maintenance of viral suppression. But overall, the paid home delivery model worked significantly better, particularly among men who can be harder to reach with clinic-based services. And the lead investigator at Global Health, Washington School of Medicine, conducted this trial from October 19 to December, December 21. And it was just a randomized group of people. And so it obviously shows that this new way of delivering HIV meds could really be, you know, on the cards. So not only do you get, you know, your DVDs and your you know, other things from your wow, medication from them too.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. Yeah. That's unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah. Thanks, Stephen. Tanya, what's your story?
My story is about the UniAIDS, the Parliament. It's a Zimbabwean-based newspaper, which is called News Zimbabwe, which released the news about Ruth Labadi, the Parliamentary Committee on the Health chairperson, has commended how the government has handled the AIDS levy funds, indicating Zimbabwe has already met its 2025 target in managing the HIV and AIDS. The AIDS levy was established in 1999 and entails a 3% deduction for every employed individual and another 3% on profit of employers and trust to finance the fight against HIV. And this fund was administered by the National AIDS Council state body. And Mrs. Labadi and MDC Alliance lauded the government's intervention while speaking in Action Aid Zimbabwe, Tech Justice and Gender Public Services Summit this week.
Wow, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shall I go next?
Yeah.
Mine's from Ghana, actually. Mine's reminds me of a proposal. The headline says, Ghana LGBT plus bill would threaten the fight on HIV and AIDS. And that's, again, from UniAIDS. So the draft law will impose a maximum 5-year term for anyone who is gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, pansexual, and non-binary. A proposal to criminalise LGBT plus people in Ghana is a gross violation of human rights and could set back a decade of progress fighting HIV and AIDS in the West African nation. And that's according to the United Nations. This proposed legislation is a gross violation of the human rights of Ghana's lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender community, who already face high levels of violence, abuse, stigma and discrimination. And that's Patrick Brenny, who runs the UniAIDS programme, said that. So gay sex is already punishable with up to 3 years in jail in Ghana. And it also makes advocating for LGBT plus rights, sympathising or offering help, financial or medical, to LGBT plus people or their organisations, a crime punishable by up to 10 years in jail. According to UniAIDS, about 470,000 Africans living with HIV die every year because they cannot or do not get tested and so miss out on treatment. So the United States is Ghana's top foreign aid donor, given a range of projects worth £210 million, and that's in 2018 and 19. European Union, Britain and the World Bank, which have provided a total of £265 million, urged Ghana to uphold protections enshrined in the country's constitution. So World Bank spokesman said that institutionalised discrimination had serious consequences in everyday life when laws are enacted that prevent people from fully participating in the workforce, economies suffer. He said, urging countries like Ghana to embrace equality of opportunity.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's crazy, isn't it, how different it is and how scary it can be to be who you are in different countries.
Yeah, definitely. And Sue, you've got one from the UK.
From our home soil, as one would say.
Soil.
I don't know what any of our listeners are Emmerdale fans, because if you are, you would have recently seen a new storyline in Emmerdale. It's a HIV storyline, and how the story is Ethan, who is the guy that goes for a HIV test, he has had a one-night stand, and apparently this one-night stand comes and knocks on the door, and, you know, which we hear a lot, you know, I've just been tested HIV positive, you need to go for a test scenario. Anyway, so this is the story of Ethan being totally shocked and going to the sexual health centre and talking through getting a HIV test. And also, he's going through, you know, because his father's a minister or a priest or a vicar, one of those two. So he's individually going through his shame of even the thought of possibility he could be HIV positive and also having a one-night stand, to be honest. And it's a really clever storyline. And what I liked about it is that when he's at the sexual health centre, PrEP is mentioned. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I've never heard PrEP being mentioned in a soap ever. And that is really bringing these really prevention measures to the forefront. So it's a really good storyline, and I was listening very carefully to make sure they had all the terminology right. They did. I do believe the Terence Higgins Trust were involved in making sure that was happening. But, you know, this is what we need, isn't it, guys? You know, I remember, about 8 years ago, there was another storyline in Emmerdale, and I not necessarily took part, but I met the person, the lady that had a HIV diagnosis in Emmerdale 8 years ago, and where there was a storyline, and I actually met her at the Soap Awards. And yeah, so it's really great that, you know, HIV is on the agenda, it's out there and in our front room. So I thought it was really interesting. And as I say, guys, it was the PrEP that pulled me in, you know, that we're talking about PrEP as if it's, you know, PrEP. So yeah, I thought it would be good to have a little air of that.
Yeah. Good stories today, yeah. Very good to get it all out there, isn't it?
Really, yeah.
Get these stories out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you for listening. Yeah, great show today. And yeah, we finished with Tech and Tam Up for Love, South Soul Orchestra.
And everyone enjoy the weather while we've got it.
Yeah, see you soon, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.